Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trundy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trundy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trundy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country as BBM Bumbarrbit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NIRS, National Indigenous Radio Service. You can have your saber, call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, the Vision Splendid Outback Festival, Film Festival, we're going to catch up, have a yarn with Annie Minnie Mace. Annie is a storyteller at the festival on the line. Annie Minnie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Welcome to the program. And before we start, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from, Annie Minnie.
Well, my grandmother and her two sisters were taken from Winton, central Queensland.
Yep.
And my grandfather was taken from North Queensland, Kukuyulangi.
Yes.
And they were married in Yarrabah in 1905.
On Yarrabah, connection up here, Gulganji.
Yeah, then they were sent down to Cherbourg Mission, where my mother and her sisters were set up. And my mum left Brisbane during the war years, Second World War. And she stayed in Brisbane working for a white family as a domestic, which all our women seem to have done around that time.
Exactly.
And my brother and I were born in Brisbane in the 50s.
And what's your brother's name, Arnie?
Michael Mace. That's why I've got the name Minnie.
Michael Minnie. And is Michael still with us?
Yeah, he lives in the house at the back of me, and he goes
Deadly. Now, you're a storyteller at the Vision Splendid, is that right?
That's right.
How long have you been doing that, Arnie?
About 7 years.
7 years. So if you're a storyteller, you don't mind a yarn then, eh?
Oh, yeah. They say I talk underwater.
Yeah, shut up. Too deadly. And share with us some of the stories that you talk about. Are you happy to do that?
Yeah, certainly. Well, the classes that go out to Winton, they take out about 100 of their master class, which is a graduating class, and I tell stories and they make films out of it.
Oh.
So we're in Winton there one day, and these four girls, they'd loaded up the back of this van with all this recording equipment, and they came up and said to me, "Annie, me, will you come out of town where there's not so much noise so we can record some of your stories?" And I'm walking all the way out, got out the back on the dirt road, and it was, I said, "Right, is that enough stories?" They said, "No, we haven't got it hooked up yet." We were talking for about half an hour, and they didn't.
And they haven't hooked up. But you enjoyed the yarn?
I've got to wait and get a sign first.
Yeah.
And within 3 minutes, these two whirlywinds that are in dust with a dirt road, two whirlywinds went across the front of the car about 20 yards in front of us. And then five parrots flew in and sat on a branch parallel with the windscreen. I'm driving at this time.
Yes.
Right, I got my sign. And I just started talking. Yep. I never ever believed in these people that say, you know, they're channeling.
Yes.
But I believe I was that day, because I wasn't thinking about what I was going to say before I said it. It was really strange. And they turned it into this film, which goes for about 5 minutes. I'll break for 20, but they cut it down. And it's called Butterfly Dreaming. It's on YouTube.
Okay.
If you type Minnie Mace after Butterfly Dreaming, you'll get the film up.
Yes.
That I'm talking in, and it's an animation.
And
an animation one.
With your storytelling, and then they make a film out of it. Of course, you're part of that. I mean, you're the instigator, you could say, aren't you?
Well, my voice is the over. My
okay, they so they use your voice, do they?
Yeah, and they put all these rocks together, because it's got a few minutes in front of how they created this animated short film.
Yes.
And they put all these big round boulders together, and in the film they make it move like a caterpillar, you know?
Oh.
down and see rocks are crawling.
So your story comes to life.
Yeah, yeah. And then this big fire comes out of the sky and forms, and this caterpillar, it goes up a log, dead log.
Yeah.
And then fire comes out of the sky and wraps it up in a cocoon.
Yeah.
It is amazing. It's
amazing. And how long have you been telling the stories here at the Vision Splendid Outback Film Festival?
Well, only for 7 years, but before that I've been talking with every school in Queensland.
Yeah, beautiful. And where are you based, Aunt?
Bribie Island.
All right, beautiful.
Yeah, I came here, there was 800 people, now there's 37,000.
Yeah, thank you, dear. That's what happens.
Happened at 69,000.
Yep. Well, plenty of mobbed out there now to borrow bread, sugar off, you know. Neighbours everywhere.
Yeah, 8 black fellas
here.
8 black fellas. 140
here, maybe. Stand back, wait your turn. Arnie, with your storytelling, you got children, grandchildren?
I've got 3 daughters, and my son passed away.
Oh, sorry.
Last week.
Yeah, sorry.
I get mixed up
all the time.
Only black fellas do.
Mm.
And 3 daughters, and I've got 4 granddaughters.
Yes.
Three granddaughters and 1 grandson.
Yeah, beautiful, darling. And when you tell your stories, of course, that's a paid gig as such, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they look after you in that sense?
Yeah, it supplements my old age pension.
Yeah, there you go, darling. You're a true entrepreneur. Businesswoman.
Got to be more than your family when you're a black
fellow,
isn't it?
Yeah, that's it, my darling. Look, fantastic. A very good story. Congratulations there, Vision Splendid. So when does the Vision Splendid Outback Film Festival happen?
Well, it starts on the 24th of June. It goes till about the 2nd of July. And we have National Aboriginal First Nations Day on the 26th.
Okay. All good timing.
Yeah, between the 20th.
And where's that happen? Down there at Bribie Island?
No, at Winton.
At Winton, out that way. All right, beautiful. So you travel out there and you're going back on country, aren't you, really?
Yeah, I'm going home.
Yeah. So you still got family out that way?
No, but I ran into a couple of mates of mine that I hadn't seen since we were 16, run around Brisbane nightclubs, you know.
Yeah, so when you get there, do you stay in accommodation or do they pitch you up in a tent or how's it working regarding accommodation at the festival?
Put me in a hotel in the main street.
There. And they look after you there. Beautiful.
There's only one main street in Winton.
Yeah, don't blink, you miss it. Exactly. Well, I'm Murray from the Curry. I'm down the road, Cloncurry. That's my mob.
I thought it was Cloncurry when I only
did it. Exactly. So we connected there, aren't? That means I can borrow $20 off you.
Oh, yeah, and I can borrow $200.
You're beautiful. too beautiful. Thank you very much for the yarn, and look, good luck with it all. Keep doing what you're doing, Arnie. The Vision Splendid Outback Film Festival, and you're the storyteller, Auntie Minnie Mace, and love your work, Auntie.
And love your program, sweetheart. I'd love to check. I'll definitely tune in to you as often as
possible. Please do. Please do. All the best, and we'll yarn soon, Auntie. You take care.
Bye, Trev.
See you, darling. Bye-bye. Beautiful yarn there. Auntie Minnie Mace. So she's a storyteller at the Vision Splendid Outback Film Festival, and that happens in Winton, Outback, Queensland, from 24 June to 2nd July. So, look, it'll be probably pretty chilly out there at that time of the year, but check it out, your mob, and go and check out the Vision Splendid Outback Film Festival. Listen to Auntie Minnie Mace tell her stories, and look, they make films out of her stories and use her voice as the voiceover. So there it is. Too deadly entrepreneur at that beautiful ripe old age in the pension bracket, so to speak. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have you saying yarn up strong? 1-800-422-416.
host, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
Yes, a very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country, BBM Bumbrabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Israeli Service, and yarning up strong, you mob, so do add to the conversation. We're going to catch up with your deadly sister now, Andrea James, who's a playwriter, and talk about Aboriginal theatre maker, that's who she is, Andrea James, continues to tell vital First Nation stories in her tribute to tennis legend Yvonne Goolagong. So I've got Andrea on the line. Good morning, my sister. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for coming to the program. So you're based down in Sydney, are you?
I am, yes, on Gadigal Country.
And probably rugged up, my sister.
Very
cold. Yes, I'm saying probably rugged up. I'm in Cairns, far north Queensland. Good to be yarning with you. Before we start, sister, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from.
Yeah, I'm a Yorta Yorta and Gai Kurnai woman.
Oh, a beautiful, fantastic, beautiful footprint. So we're talking about telling vital First Nation stories in your tribute to tennis legend Yvonne Goolagong. Not a lovely shot here on the ABC News with you and Sister Yvonne there. Tell us about this space that you're working in and, look, a legend she is, Yvonne Goolagong.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like you said before, I've got to hang out with winners. I hope that some of it will rub off on me.
Yes.
Yeah, but this is a project that's been about, you know, 4 or 5 years in the making, and we actually premiered it at the Yarrawalla Rajri Arts and Culture Festival at Griffith in 2020, and we played at the Sydney Festival, and now we're getting ready to do a really nice Australian tour kicking off at the Darwin Festival in August.
Yeah, fantastic. And look, it's about telling our history, our story as First Nation people, but also count our winnings, you know, and in all facets, all industries, all educational background. But we need more black successes in this country, in this world. And Yvonne Goolagong, of course, is high up there. So it's great to tell her story.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I was actually given her autobiography by my partner, and he was trying to impress me, and he did. Mm. And he gave it to me for my birthday, and I was just blown away by the story. I mean, we all know, everyone knows the legend of Yvonne Goolagong, but there was a whole behind-the-scenes, you know, really fascinating story. But also, you know, I've got a couple of nieces growing up, and... Mm. You know, we all love these really great role models, and it just seemed just, you know, at the time, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, when she was, you know, coming up as a tennis player, you know, the likelihood of her, you know, going over to England and taking the crown at Wimbledon was just so unlikely. It's just such a fantastic success story and a real testament, you know, to her family and her parents and all of the community that were around her to build her up, to make her believe in herself in such a way and get herself to be number one in her sport.
And look, and her winning and becoming a champion inspires our people, and not only, well, just to play tennis, it could be a young black student, grade 12, thinking, you know what, I'm going to go to university and become a doctor. You know, the
Absolutely.
Success breeds success, and it just paves the way for our people, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I grew up, I'm in my 50s now, and, you know, I grew up, there were no young Aboriginal girls or Aboriginal women on television anywhere at any time, you know, and so really she was just absolutely, absolutely groundbreaking, and it's just so important. And, you know, we've got all of these great people, the stars that have, you know, come up, Kathy Freeman and Ash Barty, you know, just recently retired. You know, to just sort of see that great legacy continuing on, and to see, you know, more and more people and young ones sort of coming up and you know, wanting to have a go in whatever field, whether it's the arts or medicine or law or, you know, whatever, construction, you know, that if you believe enough, and you know, that you can do it, you've got a good mob around you. That's why this story was, you know, it was really drawn to it because of that.
And so with the story, and you decide to go ahead with the story, you know, tell vital First Nations stories in your tribute to tennis legend Yvonne Goolagong. So you reached out to her to get in touch with her, to tell her what you were doing. She would have been, yes, forthcoming. Well, hence the photo in the ABC story here. She was all forthcoming,
yeah,
yes?
Yeah, well, look, you know, this took a while. I mean, she just doesn't know me from a bar of soap.
Yes.
Her mother, Linda Goolagong, actually has a connection to the Kamangunja Mission, which is where, you know, which is where my father's family is from. And so, you know, that was a kind of a way to connect in the way that we all do all the time, you know.
Yes, exactly.
And so, you know, it was a very slow getting to know Yvonne and her husband, Roger, because that was really important, you know, that they knew about the project. It was something that I didn't want to do, you know, without their permission.
Yes.
But, you know, on the other hand, it's very much my interpretation. It's a dramatisation, you know. So while, you know, Yvonne had been very generous in you know, reading the play, and she actually came to have a look at a moved performance of the play, because it's all set around the tennis court. It's not like going to the theatre, you know.
Sure, exactly.
You actually sit around a tennis court, because I'm a mad tennis nut. I love tennis.
Well, there you go.
And so it's literally like her life gets played out on a tennis court. So it's really active.
Tennis court slash stage.
Exactly. We've got great dancers. Jax Compton, Katrina Olsen, choreography by fantastic choreographer Vicky Van Hoot. You know, so it's all really beautifully danced and stylized, and as are the tennis matches as well. So,
where can our mob witness this fantastic play, sister?
Yeah, well, we're going to a few different places. We're going to the Darwin Festival, obviously, in August, and we're going to do a little regional tour around South Australia. We're going to Port Pirie and Whyalla, and we're going to spend some time in Adelaide as well, too. So yeah, quite a few different areas.
And we're too far north up here in Cairns, eh?
I know.
Shut up.
There.
It's warm.
Yeah, I know.
No, that's fantastic. Yeah, and look, congratulations. And a big shout out to Sister Yvonne Goolagong. And look, a true winner she is, a leader for our people.
Yeah,
and it's great that you're doing this story. And like I said, a tribute to her. I thank you very much for the yarn there, Andrea. And all the best to you.
You're welcome.
And thank you for your yarn. Please do keep in touch, and we'll be watching your work closely, my sister.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated.
Andrew, you take care, darling. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
A beautiful yarn there. Andrea James, her name is, First Nation playwriter, and look, telling the vital story and her tribute to tennis legend Yvonne Goolagong. So, look, coming to a town near you, your mob, do check it out. And, we're trying to get her to bring the play up here to Cairns, far north Queensland. But either way, it is fantastic, the fact that it's out there. To Deadly, your mob, this is National Talk Black, and we're live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bummer Brit Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Israel Radio Service. And a big shout out to that Deadly team, NERS, Too Deadly. Make a brother sound deadly. Or...
What? Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on our National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7. I
remember the day. Welcome back to BBM 98.7 FM, and joining with me, I have Amanda Healy. How's it going?
I'm good, thanks, Maddie. How are you?
I'm not too bad. And now, for our listeners out there, can you let them know who you mob and where you're from?
Yeah, sure can. My people are the Wanneroo people from the Hunter Valley in New South Wales, but I've spent most of my life living here in Western Australia, so I now live in Perth in Western Australia.
Oh, wow. How come the transition from New South Wales to WA? Sea change?
I guess, yeah. Well, look, you know, we came over here as kids, really. My dad was Aboriginal, my mum wasn't. And I think it was just, you know, really about chasing work and you know, finding a better life and getting out from under the protection of the New South Wales Aboriginal, I forget what they called it now, Aboriginal Council or yes. Whatever it was they called it in those days. So, long time ago, Maddie, long time ago. I've been here in Western Australia for nearly 50 years.
Oh, wow. That's deadly, deadly to hear that. So, Amanda, we're going to be talking about the article that was posted in the National Indigenous Times and talking about the Indigenous fashion that went over to Europe.
Yes, very exciting, huh?
Can we talk about how it all started and how this idea came about?
Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't the instigator of it, actually. DFAT, or Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, along with NIAA, I think. Mm-hmm. So NIAA every year or every couple of years seconds somebody into DFAT to work on cultural diplomacy, and I think that's where it all started. So they contacted me about a year ago asking me would I be interested in doing a fashion show in Brussels in Europe, and so of course, you know, like I jumped at the chance and went, yeah, of course, we'd be loving that, you know, so... Mm-hmm. So the talk went on and on and on for a while because of COVID. It was so hard to, you know, get anything happening. There was so much uncertainty. Mm-hmm. But when earlier this year everything opened up in Europe, or maybe it was just before Christmas, I'm not really sure, they started talking to me again. And so we decided that we'd head over there and do a show. But initially the discussion was only about me going over there and showing my fashions. But I convinced them that, you know, I'm not representative of Aboriginal Australia. There's lots of amazing creatives and supporting work in all sorts of industries from all parts of Australia. Mm-hmm. So we put a team together. So it was myself, Leandra Swim from Darwin, she's from Millingimby, but she's in Darwin now. And then we got three models, one from WA here, the gorgeous Shannon Maguire, and then two girls from the Northern Territory, Cassie Purunta Mary, I think she's from the Tiwi Islands, and then a young girl named Hayley McLean, who is from Darwin, and then we had a photographer, and then I took across a young fellow named Jack Collard, also from Noongar country, who is who played the Didge, a great Didge player.
Yes,
and I've
seen
him play before. Yidiki, yes, very good. And I'd heard him play before at a number of functions around Perth, and he's a great kid. So, so we had that little team together and a photographer named Rob Hookey, who's actually from up your way.
All right.
Cairns, Townsville way he is. So he's got a big family up that way. So I would love to... My poor old brain, I'm still struggling with jet lag here, so I can't remember.
Don't.
Yeah, I know. So he was fabulous, fantastic. We had the best team. They were great fun, but knew when to knuckle down and do their job. So it was really, really, really a fantastic experience. And the department DFAT in Brussels were extraordinarily pleased with what had
oh, with the turnout. Oh, cool. That's great to hear. So, to describe your fashion for our listeners, what did you take over, and what did you take, and was it your first time going over to Brussels for you and the crew?
Yeah, so this is my first time in Brussels, yes, and it's a gorgeous city, by the way, very, like, really welcoming. We got there and it was, like, 25 degrees during the day. We couldn't believe it. Absolutely gorgeous weather, yeah. we took it with us, I reckon. So, and then, and they couldn't believe it either, because the day we left it poured down and it hasn't stopped since. It's all raining and cold, so...
Oh, no.
But I took along my latest collection, which is a range called Ripples, and it actually tells a story of the change that's occurring in the community at the moment, like the broader acceptance of who we are and where we're from and our stories and people wanting to engage with us and, you know, all of that stuff and the ripples that we're making in the community. So that was what inspired me in this one. And I have, this year I've got two prints. So there's one Gravilia, which is by a young Yolawe woman, which is from Western New South Wales there. Mm-hmm. And her name is Jessica Tiedem. And she does, you know, it's just a really simple piece, but it looks very effective on fabric.
Wow.
And then the other one we have is a lady named Helena Geiger, who's from Gambangya country in northern New South Wales, and she does a batiking approach to telling the story. So, and that one, the other one is called Ripple, and that's really about sitting and watching the ripples on the water, as
yes.
You know, and she's a freshwater woman. So, so it's a sort of a gorgeous blue colour, and then of course the Gravilia, which is like a maroni red and cream. So, and we make, you know, like I make, I guess this year we're doing women's suits, and we'll be doing men's suits a little bit later along, I think, but big flowy dresses, lots of nice, you know, lots of nice stuff this year for everybody in the community, I think. And I'm sure that everybody will find something to wear. We do, I always do men's short sleeve shirts and matching shorts or boardies or whatever you want to call it. So I'll have those in stock soon, and the rest of the stuff will be, we'll have here by, I think, the end of July. So, great products coming out and all Indigenous owned. Of course, we're a social enterprise, and the funds go back to the artists. Every quarter I pay them for the usage of their artwork, and that Deadly Mob, all right, they
cool.
People that I work with over and have worked with over the years, so it's great space, and I'm sort of really loving to see the change and the acceptance.
Yep.
People still ask, you know, is it okay for me to wear your stuff? And I'm like, yeah.
You get asked that question a lot.
Yeah, I do. You know, from non-Indigenous people who go, oh, you know, I think that's your stuff.
And
I'm
they
like,
feel
no,
unsure about
stuff.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which is interesting, hey?
That goes to show a lot of respect, like, for them to ask that question to you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty deadly, like, to get asked that question. Is it all right if I wear it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like
it
that. Is. That's good.
It is. It is interesting. And, of course, you know, the purpose of Kirikin was, well, it has become. So initially it was just about getting sustainable income to artists. But
yes.
It actually has become now more about telling the story that we're not just, you know, like that we're actually high end. It's not, you know, I used to say, please don't associate us with $4.99, you know, boomerangs that are made in Indonesia or anymore. You know, like that time is gone. So, you know, everything we do now it should represent a beautiful, deep, meaningful culture that's been around for tens of thousands of years, and it needs to be treated with respect, and that respect doesn't come cheaply. So I sort of find that people, well, when we were in Europe just now, we did a show in London for, you know, like just a really small show for a small group of people.
Yeah.
But one of the ladies came up to us afterwards and said, you know what, I've worked for this company here for 10 years and I never ever knew anything about Australian culture other than this business. So she was blown away. She didn't know that there was anything else and other than the English that, you know, or the Europeans that settled here. So that was really surprising and a little bit mind-blowing, as you say.
Yes,
you
know, too true.
Wow, mate. Yeah.
Yes, and like you said, your fashion's name, Ripple, and it's making that effect.
Yeah. And you know what? It makes you realise how much education still needs to take place, how much people still need to know.
Yes, and learn about the history that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think there's a lot more, and people want to know it, but it's still not as widely known as I would, you know, as I would like it to be, you know, that's for sure.
Yes, too true. And it's a very sort of like a sensitive subject for most to talk about as well, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure why, but yeah, I agree. But we're getting there, you know, like it's my... So I'm old enough that I remember the referendum in 1967 and I remember, you know, the conditions that my father had to endure as a young man and with a young family and how tough, and that was probably, you know, pretty much the main reason he moved to WA back then. And I still remember that very clearly. I still remember the abuse that he used to receive walking down the street. And so, and it's taken a hell of a long time for us to, I guess, improve that situation, and the hard work that some of our mob have done to actually keep advancing our cause when lots of other people would give up is just remarkable. And so for me, I'm really excited about the changes I'm seeing now, and then a new Prime Minister who talks about introducing the Uluru Statement as into legislation.
Yes, AA Anthony Albanese.
Yeah, I think that's amazing.
That's going to be good for the people. I think that's something that we all can celebrate as First Nations Australians and non-Indigenous Australians.
Yeah.
But we are slowly coming together, but like they say, only time will tell.
Yeah, absolutely. People were loving it in Europe. They just, in fact, I've got a whole heap of orders out of Ireland and Europe that I have that I have to fill. And some shops over there wanted to keep, you know, like want to stock me, you know, stock my products for future sales and stuff, which is great. You know, I mean, you can't complain about that, can you?
Yeah, you can't. All you can do is smile about it and keep moving forward, I guess, eh?
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. And Amanda, last question. Where can our listeners purchase your fashion?
Oh, awesome. That's a great question too. So we're online on www.kirikin.com. So Kirikin is a word from my people, and the mission has recorded it as, because of course you'll know that it was illegal for us to speak our language, it was illegal for us to you know, congress with our people, practice our culture, all of that stuff. So we lost a lot of our language and culture, but Kirikin was one of those words that was recorded by the missioners that, and it really was supposed to have meant your Sunday best clothes. But some of the older ladies think it probably originally meant, you know, possum cloak or something along those lines, one of the more interesting or one of the more ceremonial garments. But I like that. I like that, you know, Sunday best, your best clothes.
Yeah.
And that's what
your best
hurricane is. Yeah. So so you can find my clothes, anyway, back on the subject.
Yeah.
you can find my clothes on www.kirikan.com. Our new range will be here about the end of July. So I'm just working on all of those orders right now. And, yeah, so keep your eye out. There'll be some pretty deadly stuff for all the mob. I do get quite a few purchases up there. I probably should be looking for a shop to stock my stuff up there, I think.
Maybe you should, because Far North Queensland is sort of like WA.
Yeah, it is.
It's always, is it tropical over that way, sort of?
Well, we're more Mediterranean climate. I'm down in Perth.
So okay.
Like at the moment, it's winter. We're just sort of hitting winter, and it's very wet and cold.
Okay, so it rains and stuff.
You get that, yeah, so you get yours all over summer, eh?
Yeah, so basically we're winter here too, so it's cold for us.
Yeah.
For us people in the tropics, because we're not used to it. We're just used to the hot.
Yeah.
And Amanda,
all that humidity.
Yes, so true. It's a pleasure having you on National Talk Black. And thank you for talking about your fashion and travelling overseas. Hopefully we can probably see some of your stuff over here when we have the Cairns Indigenous Art Fair on.
Yeah, that would be deadly, wouldn't it? I've actually often looked at that. It's a pretty awesome fair that you have there. So, yeah, I'd love to do that. Thank you so much for inviting me, Maddie. It was really nice to talk to you.
No worries. In Torres Strait language, Esau means thank you. May you have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda.
Bye now.
Bye. There you have it. That was Amanda Healy. And you can check out her fashion. If you want to purchase some, go to www.kirikan.com. But you can check out the links that will be posted in the Facebook post on National Talk Black here on BBM 98.7 FM.
Hey, what get on your mob? It's me, Bushtaka Bungie. And you're listening to the National Talk Black program. Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Yes, a very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, on your dingy country, as BBM Bumbadrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your say by calling from that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, the Aboriginal Memorial moves to heart of the National Gallery of Australia as part of a major revitalisation project. And this installation keeps what we have. It is our identity in these hollow logs. We're going to catch up a yarn there with First Nation engagement, Bruce Johnson McLean. On the line. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning. Really well, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Let's talk about this fantastic Aboriginal memorial and now at the National Gallery of Australia and its existence and how it's a bridge builder, an educator in more ways than one.
Yeah, well, the Aboriginal memorial is a really important work of art. We acknowledge it as our most important work in the National Collection. And, you know, it was created in 1988 by the Bundjalung curator and artist, John Mundine, and 43 members of the communities in Ramanginning and the surrounding area up in Arnhem Land. It's 200 dupun or hollow log memorial poles that really stand in memorial for all of those Aboriginal lives lost to frontier conflict. In those 200 years between 1788 and 1988, and really were an important marker and symbol for our bicentenary in 88.
And so, look, it's a powerful statement. Like I said, educator, you know, and existence. You know, when the white sails came to this country.
That's right. And, you know, for us, it really is about acknowledging our history in this place. You know, I think in order for us to really have a good sense of ourselves as a national gallery and as a nation, we need to remember and we need to acknowledge, and this memorial helps us to do that.
Well, and when you look at the renowned Bundjalung artist, curator, John Mundine, OAM, well, he stated that an enormous crime has been committed and is remembered here.
That's right. And, you know, particularly in those years around 88, there was a willful ignorance, and that continues to this day. You know, the celebrations around the bicentenary were big. You know, there were those flotillas and big winking kangaroos and all sorts of things.
Yes.
But you know, it's really important that this work remains one of the most important remaining objects of that bicentenary. You know, this work that remembers all of our mob who were lost to that conflict and to the ongoing trauma of colonisation. And that is, you know, our National Gallery's statement
exactly.
and contribution to that year, and that it remains strong in the heart of our gallery.
Memorial to remain in public space and preserve for future generations, of course, yes.
That's right, of course. We, as I said, we view it as our most important work in our collection, and we want it to be something that remains here. It will always be relevant. It will always be our history, and we want to make sure that people continue to acknowledge that and understand that. And in whatever way our history moves forward, we do need to continue to acknowledge that.
These hollow logs, how tall do they stand, Bruce?
The hollow logs, they range between, you know, over 3 metres for the largest one to around about 10 centimetres for the smallest one. When they were made, it was an acknowledgement of, you know, what the artist wanted to make. It wasn't about an institution demanding the biggest and the best thing, but about, you know, whatever the artist and the community wanted to contribute towards that that work. So the 200 poles really do range, and they really reflect, you know, the different mobs, the different communities, the different clans that made each of them, and their styles and their stories, their dreamings, but also the way that they wanted to portray them in that memorial.
Well, exactly. And having Aboriginal memorials, especially at the National Gallery of Australia, which is visited by a lot of our Australian students, school students at all levels, primary, secondary and high school, as well as university. So it's a great educational platform, isn't it? In more ways than one.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, every single school group that comes through our space, and, you know, we have you know, hundreds of them at the moment, even with COVID, but, you know, thousands in a regular year who come through this space. And all of them are taken through the memorial, and it really grounds their understanding of what they see as they go through that space. The idea of having it in the middle of the gallery is that you get to be grounded in First Nations experiences here, both, you know, the horrors of our history, but also the incredible, perseverance, the tenacity, the survival of our people and our cultures, and also the beauty of our art. So, you know, it's a way that we get to ground all of those sorts of experiences
exactly.
and to tell them to all of those audiences.
And Bruce, can you kindly make mention of the artists there? Guruwara artist Francis Riccoli, is that right?
Yes, that's right. So Francis Riccoli, who's one of the 43 Yolngu artists who are included in that memorial, and of course only have 7 of those original 43 artists in the memorial. And Frances is one of those. And just 2 weeks ago, she sent us a message for the reopening of the space. Mm. And she said that, you know, a long time ago, we used these poles for our funerals. Yolngu people put the bones into these and they left on country. Mm. These all have different stories from different clan families. They have ancient stories on them about traditional ways of life.
And very sacred too, I must add, Bruce.
That's it, very sacred poles, although these ones were all made for, you know, an outside audience,
yes.
and that's been something that that community has worked on for many years is, you know, how to make these objects for outside and art audiences. But yes, super important that these poles are, you know, protected and respected, and that's really
what and so powerful and thankful, so powerful and thankful for them to share with us in this sacred space, you could say.
That's right. Yeah. So the fact that, you know, so many artists have shared their dreaming, but also you know,
these
poles, which are markers of, you know, the, all of the people that we've lost in our space. It is a really profound act of sharing, and I think, you know, everybody should be really grateful for the fact that, you know, after all of this, our community still want to share this incredible story and culture with everybody.
With everybody. Bruce, I thank you so very much for sharing. Look, all the best to your team, your family, stay safe, and thank you very much. And to all listeners travelling to Canberra, National Gallery of Australia, yes, do check it out, please.
Bimby, thank you.
Thank you. All the best to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
A beautiful yarn there. That's the First Nation Engagement, Bruce Johnson-McLean, from the National Gallery, Barbara Jean Humphreys, Assistant Director. And look, very important space. The Aboriginal Memorial moves to the heart of National Gallery of Australia as part of the major revitalisation project. So look, fantastic. And recognising our mob, and when the white sails first come to this country, there it is, your mob. Have your say in Yarn Up Song here. Add to the conversation, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black.